everybody. I'm Brittany Lewis with Forbes Breaking News. Joining me now is North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum. Governor Burgum, thank you so much for joining me once again.
Great to be with you again, Brittany. Thanks for having me on.
Of course, it is good to have you back to kick off the conversation. You announced recently that you aren't running for re-election. Can you dive into why?
Well, it was a tough decision to make because it's been an incredible honor for the First Lady Catherine and I to be serving the citizens of North Dakota. And it's especially hard to think about a coach when you got your team in place and you're winning championships and everybody's coming back, no seniors are graduating. It's a hard thing to step away, but we've got such a great team built and we're hitting on all cylinders in North Dakota. We've got the lowest unemployment in the country, we have the highest workforce participation, highest GDP of any Republican-led state in the nation, $60 billion of capital projects from the private sector that are trying to come to North Dakota because of our tax and regulatory environment that we have. We've been lowering taxes. We've been driving our economy forward. So a tough time to leave, but I believe in term limits. We didn't have them in North Dakota. We got them passed on the ballot during the time that I was in office. And I've served two terms and we're charging ahead. We have about 270 days left till next December. And we're gonna make every day count. And then of course I came from the private sector. I was working in the private sector right up to the day before I got sworn in as governor. And that's the one thing I can control is going back to the private sector. But meanwhile, we're doing everything we can to make sure that President Trump wins in November, because I know as a governor, have a front row seat of what it was like to serve first 4 years under President Trump and now under the Biden administration. And Biden administration, it's all headwinds for a state like ours, with agriculture, energy, technology. The amount of regulation that's being poured on us out of Washington, D.C. is almost incomprehensible. It doesn't make any sense from a policy standpoint, but that's a battle that we have to fight. It's a battle that I'm fighting this year, helping to campaign for President Trump, because North Dakota and the United States can't take four more years of Joe Biden.
You mentioned that you first started in the private sector. You're then governor for two terms. Are you returning to the private sector, going back to business, or can we expect you to wade into politics?
Well, I'm going to choose a path where I can have the most impact. That's what brought Catherine and I into running for governor in the first place, was we realized, from the business standpoint, there's great things that business can do. And if you're successful, we were blessed with that kind of success that we were able to do some philanthropy. But I realized, wow, government spends so much money. Even in a little state like North Dakota, our budget just for K-12 is $2 billion every biennium. So if you want to make a difference, I mean, I'd say to the business leaders that are out there, if you've ever thought about, jumping in the arena, the political side, we need business leaders that know how to solve problems, know how to drive for solutions, can have a huge impact. And we've had a huge impact, and look forward, whatever we do next, whether it's private sector or whether it's more public service, it's going to be focused on where we can have the biggest impact.
You endorsed the former president for 2024. He is the presumptive GOP nominee. KFYR is reporting that North Dakota Senator Kevin Cramer said the former president speaks very highly of you and you could be on the VP shortlist. What do you make of that news? Could you see yourself as the vice president?
Well, I think President Trump, the policies that he has, is when he was in office, the world was safer and the United States was more prosperous. And now under Joe Biden's weakness, we've got wars breaking out all over the world. And we know that the inflation under Joe Biden is choking every American, whether it's food on the table or gas in your car or the rent you pay. Our economy's really taken a hit with the uncontrolled spending. And now they want to add almost $5 trillion of additional taxes on top of that. So it's a very clear choice. I think in terms of the quality and the kind of people that are going to want to serve in a Trump administration, President Trump's going to have his pick. He'll make his choice for vice president at the time of his choosing. He'll have a load of people that want to serve in this administration, at cabinet leaders and other levels. And the interest level's never been higher. I think this is a second Trump administration now will be very different from the first one. In part because the people will understand that there's an opportunity here to really take America in the right direction. I think that he's going to have an enormous amount of talent from the private sector wanting to work for him in the next administration. And I think that's great for our country.
What I'm hearing from you is you're not shutting the door on potentially being a vice presidential pick. What about a cabinet position? Would you want to serve in the Trump administration in any capacity?
Well, I would say when we ran decided to run for president last year, it was because we cared about three things: the economy, energy, and national security. Those are the big issues. And like I said, we're going to want to serve whether private sector, public sector, in an area where we have the most impact. But it wasn't why I ran for president. It's not why I'm supporting President Trump right now. It's not about a position for me. It's about what's right for the country. That's the way we've always approached it, and that's the way we're approaching it now, which is this really matters. And I just have to tell anybody who's listening, this isn't about politics. As a governor, in a state where our economy depends on energy, agriculture, national security, we're a big border state. It's absolutely clear what my job. I had the same job. I was a governor under Trump. I was a governor under Biden, but my job changed completely because now the state of North Dakota, like many other states, we just have to keep pushing back on the overreach of the federal government. The states created the federal government, not the other way around, and the federal government is stepping into so many areas of regulation that belong at the state or local level, and this is raising the cost. Part of the contributors raising the cost of every product for every citizen buys, and it's part of the why we've had such high inflation. And I just feel so strongly about that. I've saw overregulation in business. I've never seen it like I've been with a governor, and that's the real threat. I mean, the way we get more efficient federal government is we get the government back in the lane, and we either stop doing stuff or we delegate it back out to the states where it belongs. And it's okay if 50 states. We have 50 different platforms of innovation. That's an okay thing for our country. Innovation, not regulation, is how we're going to win going forward. And selling energy to our friends and allies versus buying it for adversaries, that's how we're going to win. These are just simple common sense things that I think every business leader that's listening to your show understands.
I hear you. I hear that when it comes to policy, you agree with former President Trump over current President Joe Biden. I do not want to talk about, though, former President Trump's language. Over the weekend, he made some remarks. I'll read them to you when I want to get your reaction. He said this during a rally, quote, "If this election isn't won, I'm not sure that you'll ever have another election in this country." He also added, quote, "I don't think you're going to have another election in this country if we don't win this election. I don't think you're going to have another election, or certainly not an election that's meaningful." He also called January 6 prisoners hostages. When it comes to this type of language, do you think this is helpful? The nature of it is inflammatory. And how much do you think that this matters from a former president who could be the next leader of the free world?
I think this is just politics as usual in our country. I think both teams are trying to rally their bases and saying this is the most important election. We hear that every 4 years, the most important election we've ever had. So I don't think there's anything out of the norm relative to that. And I think that this is a very important election. It is about going in one direction or another, and the two directions are very starkly different. But all the talk about that we they say that somehow having a Republican in office is going to be a threat to democracy. I mean, I completely disagree with that. The party that I'm part of believes in freedom and liberty. And right now, we talked about the regulation under Joe Biden. We're fighting at the state of North Dakota 21 different rulemaking efforts, none of which those came through Congress. A rule like the SEC rule that on climate that came out last week, 886 pages, the methane rule over 1,000 pages long. Each one of these are just killing our ability to generate clean, sustainable energy in America. And when we're attacking our own industries, when Joe Biden, by executive order, is saying we can't build LNG facilities to ship clean natural gas to our allies, when he's doing that by executive order, that's what feels like a dictatorship. So this is a stark contrast. And I think if anybody believes in free markets, they believe in innovation, they believe in America being operating at strength in the world versus operating out of weakness. Those folks are going to show up and they're going to be voting for President Trump.
But when Trump specifically says, "I don't think you're going to have another election, or certainly not an election that's meaningful if he doesn't win," does that sound like someone who's upholding democracy?
I think he's drawing a contrast about the importance of the election, because when you say not one like this, because again, we're in a position right now where we've got to make sure that we are electing people that follow the Constitution, people that make sure that they understand how this country was set up. And it was not set up to have federal government being in charge of everything. This goes back to the very founding of our country. Was the 10th Amendment of the Constitution says there's very specific and enumerated responsibilities the federal government has. One of those responsibilities is national security, which includes border security. And Joe Biden is not doing his job. If we have an open border, 10 million people have come into this country that are here illegally, and who knows how many that are beyond that that passed through that didn't have any contact, because we've got gaps in our gaps thing. We've had North Dakota National Guard down at the border during my time in office. I've been down to the border more times than Joe Biden. I know that there are millions of people that aren't even in that number of 10 million that the official number that have come across from. And you know, Ronald Reagan said, if a nation isn't a nation unless it can control its borders. And when I think about the people that we've met on the campaign trail around the country, when you've lost 330,000 Americans to overdose deaths just during the time that Joe Biden has been in office. I mean, we actually are in a state right now where we've got a mass invasion with mass casualties of Americans, many of them, you know, 18 to 45 year olds. Largest cause of death now among that age group in America is fentanyl poisonings. So, you know, we're in a cyber war, we're in a cold war, and we're actively, in my mind, essentially under attack right now. And so I think we have to be focused on those real facts. You know, it's way more important versus, you know, what one party or the other might be saying at a political rally. We've got to just focus on what's actually happening, and what's happening right now is made every state a border state. It's made every city more dangerous. And it's 2016, the border was about immigration. It's not about that. Now it's about national security and it's about public safety.
Governor, you actually visited North Dakota National Guard soldiers at the border last month. I also want to talk about this divide when it comes to immigration and border security, because it is a lightning rod issue in this country. Republicans face criticism that the reason the Biden-backed bipartisan border bill was dead on arrival in the House was because Donald Trump wasn't supportive of it. The Biden administration and Democrats have been pilloried since border crossings reached record highs under the Biden administration. So A, could you tell us about your experience at the border? And B, what would you tell former President Donald Trump when it comes to border security?
Well, two things. I was down at the border last August, and I was again down there just recently. One change that Americans should know is that from, you know, last summer, well, we had both times there was people from 140 countries coming in, every country on the terrorist watch list, record number of people that are coming across that represent a danger to our country. And that's the national security, public safety risk that's there. But one big shift was China. Just in the sector that I was in a few weeks ago, just since October 1, there have been over 20,000 Chinese nationals that have entered the country. And these aren't people that are economically, you know, challenged, or, you know, walked through the Darien Gap or have been on some, you know, journey for the last 9 months. These are people that flew from China to Ecuador where they don't need a visa. Then they fly from Ecuador to a border city like Mexicali, Nogales, or Tijuana. And then they pay somebody $5,000 to drive them to a hole in the wall. And then they walk into the United States. And some of them are coming across with roller bags and neck pillows. They just left China 2 days ago. And so this is a very different form of what's happening right now. And again, to my mind, not really being reported by the mainstream media, they keep focusing on what Congress is doing or not doing. And we all know that under President Trump, he was able to close the border. He didn't need a bill from Congress, and Joe Biden doesn't need a bill from Congress. And right now there's nearly 1,000 positions that are open on the border right now among the Customs and Border Patrol. The Biden administration should just go out and fill those positions. And if they can't fill them, then they need to figure out a way to use other executive orders. If you got an executive order to shut down LNG facilities, which is a private sector activity, which is nothing to do with the federal authority, he certainly would have the executive authority to do his job, which is secure our borders. And so blaming Congress blaming Republicans seems to be the strategy that Joe Biden has in a election year, as opposed to actually making America more secure.
how do you make America more secure? Because I've talked to many lawmakers and they say every state is a border state. Democrats say there's a crisis on the border. They obviously, as you were saying, blame Republicans. Republicans blame Democrats. What is the solution here? Because experts I've talked to say legislation isn't going to be passed before the 2024 election. So when can we, A, see any type of solution? And what do you think that solution needs to be?
Well, like I said, I don't think we need any bills in Congress. I think we just need executive branch fulfilling their authorities. I mean, Joe Biden, in his first 100 days in office, did 94 executive orders reversing activity that President Trump had done to make the border more secure. So what could happen right now, doesn't require a bill, doesn't require an election, is Joe Biden could just say, hey, I made a mistake. I shouldn't have reversed those policies under the Trump administration. I'm going to drop those executive orders. I mean, that's something that he could do immediately. America needs to know that. He's playing the blame game. Blaming is not leadership. Leadership is actually solving a problem. And it's his responsibility. The federal government's got the tools, and he's not doing it because I think politically for him, his own party doesn't support closing the border. So that's why he's not doing it. I mean, if he cared about the 330,000 lives we've lost to overdose, or if he cared about public safety, if he cared about a future 9/11 event that could happen because we've got, you know, people from Syria, North Korea, Iran, all coming into our country right now. I mean, we could have a terrorist cell that's just walked across the border. We don't even know they're here. If he cared about that, he would shut the border today. I'm talking about Joe Biden, because Joe Biden's got the tools right now as president to shut the border.
Former President Trump, though, has faced criticism that he said, blame it on me, that bipartisan border bill did not get passed. Do you think that both sides here are playing political football with an issue that Americans think is one of the most important issues facing the country?
Well, I don't think you can blame the Republicans on this one, because the Democrats have tried to say without this bill, we can't close the border. And that's just false. Joe Biden can reverse the 94 executive orders that he put in that overturned President Trump's rules. He can do that without any Congress help. He can fill the 1,000 positions that are open on the Border Patrol without a bill from Congress. There's appropriation for that. They've just got to get out there. And again, if there was actual respect from this administration for the people doing law enforcement, I mean, it's no different. We've had some big blue metros that have defunded police, and effectively the Biden administration is not supporting the people that are in law enforcement. I've met them, multi-generational families down there on the border they say, give us the word, give us the tools, we'll be able to shut the border. But no, what they're doing is their assignment is do paperwork. And I'm not talking computer work. Their assignment is go do paperwork and process, in some cases, you know, hundreds of thousands of people a month, you know, into the country. And when your job is to protect the border, and now your job is to help do paperwork to get people into the country illegally, it's pretty demoralizing, because that's not why you went into law enforcement. You went into this specifically to control our border and protect our nation, not to aid and abet people that are entering illegally. And that's what they're being asked to do by the Biden administration. And that could stop tomorrow with new directive coming from the White House.
You said at the top of this interview, you are working to get former President Trump back into the White House. As you know, polls suggest that most Americans aren't excited for a 2020 sequel. So how are you working specifically to get Republicans excited to vote for President Trump?
Well, I think we have to focus on the policy differences. The policy differences between Joe Biden and President Trump have never been more stark. And I think the choices that Americans have, and I think the simple question is going to come down to, people are going to say, hey, was I better off under President Trump, or am I better off under Joe Biden? And when you think about how inflation has eroded 30% of every individual's savings that had a savings account, that's half of America has a savings account, 30% of that value, inflation under Joe Biden's come like a thief in the night and stolen 30% of their hard-earned savings. They're going to have to work longer before retirement. And then on the 50% of Americans that are living paycheck to paycheck, they're the ones that are really getting hurt by Biden policies, because they're the ones that are paying more for, again, put gas in their car and food on their table and paying more for their rent. And I think it's the economic choices are clear. And then in terms of national security, we wouldn't have the war in Ukraine. We wouldn't have what's going on in the Middle East if we had strength coming from the Biden administration, but their appeasement of Iran, their Swiss cheese sanctions, you know, have allowed all of our adversaries, Iran, Venezuela, Russia, to come back in and be energy powerhouses. Those folks are selling their oil and gas now directly to China. They're becoming China's discount gas station. So all of this is helping our adversaries. And meanwhile, the full force and effect of the Biden administration is trying to kill the U.S. energy industry, whether it's canceled pipelines, canceling LNG things, restrictions on drilling, the methane rule. I mean, it is, there's 100 things they've done to try to kill this industry. And then when they're doing that, we take away the economic security we have for America. And then they spend taxpayer dollars subsidizing 500,000 EV charging stations with this green dream that somehow all of our cars are going to run electrically, when they won't permit a power plant. You won't permit a transmission line. They're shutting down prematurely existing power plants. They won't permit nuclear. And so then I don't know where the power is coming for those 500,000 charging stations. And the batteries are all going to be made in China, because China controls 85% of the rare earth minerals. So we're in a spot right now where it's just like upside down land. The energy policy of the Biden administration is hurting Americans individually. It's hurting American companies, and it's empowering dictators around the world. And it's literally led to wars, because, again, you know, Putin is paying for his war with his energy sales, and Iran is funding Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis with their energy sales. And America could be competing with and crushing those competitors and doing it with cleaner. If you care about the environment, you would want to have the U.S. producing all the energy, not none of the energy, because we do it cleaner and smarter and safer than anyone else in the world.
Governor Burgum, we will leave it there. Thank you again for a very insightful conversation. I look forward to our next one.
Thank you, Brittany. Thanks for having me on. Have a great day.